Hello and welcome to Differential Discussions. I'm Melissa.
I'm Dave.
And today we have a guest with us. We have David McGlasson, who's going to share with us a little bit about the nomenclature of coagulation factors, which we talked about in one of our previous episodes very briefly, just about how, you know, it's Roman numerals. But Dave McGlasson is going to tell us a little bit more about that. So Dave, welcome. Do you want to tell us a little bit about yourself?
Well, I'm a retired clinical research scientist that worked 30 some odd years for the Department of Defense at the Clinical Research Division at Wolfert Hall Medical Center, which recently has been torn down and put up a clinic. But the Clinical Research Division is still there. I also was an ex-Army. Strangely enough, I wind up in hemostasis and thrombosis in the military. I taught microbiology for 2.5 years. I've been in veterinary pharmacology research in the clinical lab. I was the supervisor of laboratory at the university hospital. And I also ran the hemostasis immunology labs at the med school. I'm like every other medical laboratory scientist that has two kids, two cats, two dogs, and a mortgage. So I'm working two jobs, you know, for a long time. I've been able to, I had the good fortune to, in my job, especially working for the military, to travel a lot, giving presentations. I've published several articles. You can find it under Google Scholar citations. I don't need to recite the numbers. I think there's a small biography of me on a website called Clot Club, which is sponsored by Dia Pharma, who actually employs me to write articles every quarter on hot topics and coagulation. And I was at a meeting in New Orleans at the International Society of Laboratory and Hematology year before last. And I noticed that people were using interchangeably European Arabic numbers, like number 9, versus Roman numeral numbers that were in the classic factor with an F, an I, and a large X. And I'm going, this is bizarre, because I had just, I also review for journals, and I just reviewed a couple of articles, one in Seminars in Thrombosis and Hemostasis, and the other one in Journal of Thrombosis and Thrombolysis. And it was very interesting how the authors were interchangeably using Roman numerals and the Arabic numbers. And I'm going, this is getting confusing. Now, this goes back to actually a story. I was one of the people that invented the hybrid curve for monitoring people on heparin. This is like for unfractionated and low molecular weight heparins. And it started with a conversation when I was working at University Hospital on the weekend. I got a call. I got an order down for a factor 10 assay. And I go, no, they don't want a factor 10 assay. I mean, it's a pretty rare factor deficiency, or the person's been eating rat poison. So I called the unit and I said, yeah, we just got an order for a factor 10. Are you sure that's what you want? And I had someone on the phone, and I'm not meaning this to be in a derogatory manner, but English was not their first language. And so I was trying to communicate with them. I said, okay, has the person, has this rare deficiency or what? What are you trying to get on this? A factor 10. No, a factor X. Oh, okay. Well, that's a Roman numeral for factor 10. Dead silence. And so then I said, are you using this to monitor some kind of anticoagulant, you know, like Coumadin or heparin? Heparin. Okay, I said, we need to know what kind of heparin. Is it unfractionated? Is it one of the low molecular weights? Which one? Heparin, she screams and slams the phone down. I thought, man, we don't have to deal with this. So what I did was then I worked up a way where we could use a single calibrator system on the hybrid curve where we didn't have to worry about what they sent us. They said, okay, we want an anti-factor 10A. which is what they should have ordered. And we had sent out like dozens of emails, hard copies, gave seminars on what to order when this first came out because it was a change. And so I used this, and I was able to establish a single curve calibrators by using combinations. And now what it's evolved into is three calibrators, all liquid, and that's what almost 99% of the people use now. And it really has solved the problem. But the communication of this is really weird. And something that just has come up recently that just irritated me about standardizations of lab assays is everybody knows what the PSA is, prostate-specific antigen for measuring people with prostate cancer, right? Okay, now they've got this new drug out called Renvic, which uses P, small s, and a capital A for psoriatic arthritis. Now, who would have picked that and why? So we've got a problem here. And also, I found out that in school, like one of my colleagues, good friend, has a daughter that teaches in high school. And I asked her, I said, Amanda, do you teach Roman numerals anymore? And she goes, only when Super Bowl is here. And I go, oh, okay. So we've got a group of people who have never used Roman numerals, and especially since we have digital clocks, or we have a a lot of the clocks that are on the walls now don't use Roman numerals. So we got issues with this. But at this meeting, they were using them interchangeably. And the articles I was reviewing were doing it also. And now we've got, since you've got gene therapies out there for like factor eight and factor nine, hemophilia A and B, we've got an issue there where they're using the Roman, not the Roman numeral, but they're using the European type, like the regular eight and nine. So we had the issue, and we tried to correct it. We again went back and with the pharmacy and with the hematology departments, trying to make sure that everybody standardized the things, particularly with the anti-factor 10A. Now that is getting better, but I still see orders where they're using the 10A. And even I'll show you a little bit later on a schematic that I have, the classic coagulation cascade, and it's all in European Arabic numbers that some person put out. So, I posted this on LinkedIn a few months ago. And I got something like, I think it was over 1,400 impressions on the post on which ones do you favor? Some people said Roman numerals forever, stuff like that. But it was probably about 40, 60 on people who still wanted to use Roman numerals versus European Arabic numbers to identify the coagulation factors 1 through 13. Now, this has been a problem for years. Going back to the mid-50s, it became apparent that a standardized unification needed to be established to name coagulation factor proteins. And, different laboratories in different areas in different countries were all using different names and different numbers in their nomenclature. I think it was in 1954. For example, factor seven had 13 different names. Factor eight had eight names. Factor nine was identified by six different ones, and factor 10 by two. And some of these are still used today, as I'll show you in a little bit. It basically chaos reigned in how people were naming and identifying the coagulation factor proteins. Now, the nomenclature of blood clotting factors details in 50, it was in 1954. They had a committee for, and I think it was for the nomenclature of blood clotting factors was formed with a primary object. Their basic objective was let's standardize this and get it down. Just I want to give you a brief kind of a funny thing that actually happened to me with Roman numerals and Arabic numbers. When you get to a certain age, they start giving you cognitive tests. Like, okay, he's still got his mind. I had a recent MRI, it was there, and a nurse gave me a sheet of paper and says, I want you to draw a clock face and have the time come out 10 till 10. And she left the room. So I thought, well, I'm going to jack with her a little bit. So I did it all in Roman numerals. And she comes back in, she looks at it and goes, what is this? I said, well, that's 10 after 10. What are these figures? She did not know Roman numerals. And I guess this person was probably 30, something like that. So you can see how it can be messed up in a lot of ways. But the committee came, tried to perform, and they were only able to get factors up through 1 through 9 at the time, because some of the other factors had not been discovered yet. If you go down to look on the screen that I've got there, in 1963, they came up with a nomenclature from factor 1 through factor 13. Now, if you'll look at the on the left, we've got our coagulation factors. If you'll notice, factor 12 and factor 13 are missing, because up until this committee formed initially, 12 and 13 had not been discovered yet. Okay, so you can see that names have come up here, and this is, they came up with the idea to use a synonym for each factor. And you can see these are ones that we're very familiar with. And notice things like factor 10 was a Stuart-Brauer factor. Factor 11 was a plasma thromboplastin antecedent. Notice that there is no factor 6. There was a factor 6 at one time, and they discovered that it was really activated factor 5A. So, they had to go back, and then 6 is still left open. It's really kind of funny. Several years ago, I think it was International Technodyne came out with a device called a factor 6 that was kind of a activated clotting time, where you put a tube of blood in, you see how long it takes to clot after the reagent is added to it. And they called it a factor 6, which I thought was kind of cool. Didn't last very long on the market. Going down a little bit further, you're going to see some really interesting stuff here. This gives you the clotting factor number, the name, the function, the plasma half-life, and the concentration. Now, notice here where it says factor 12, Hegemann. Hegemann's factor is very interesting, because when they discovered Mr. Hegemann that had no factor 12, he died of a blood clot. It was actually a an issue that, in fact, they are using factor 11 and factor 12 now as ways of coagulation, where they can control or substitute, like they do factor 8 and factor 9. It's some of the new stuff that's out there, I think. And I wrote a article on it in Clot Club here a few months ago. But factor 13 was the fibrin stabilizing factor, and that's the ones that we primarily know. Well, the gentleman, Palta and Palta and Soroya, when they did the overview of the coagulation system, if you'll notice here, and this is the first time I had seen this, I had never seen factor 14 and factor 15 ever used. It had always been prekallikrein and high molecular weight kininogens. Okay, and deficiencies of these usually don't cause bleeding, but they do have a problem when they're the activating factors in the coagulation cascade. Now, also, they went and they took all of the other biological factors that we know of, and they established Roman numerals for each one of them. Like protein S is factor 20. Like I said, this is the first time I had seen this, and I have researched this, and I can't find anybody or any large system like Mayo Clinic Johns Hopkins or anybody where they have a large coagulation laboratories, special coag laboratories that are using these numbers. They're sticking with the von Willebrand factor, antithrombin. And some people have said that antithrombin 3 should just be antithrombin, but it's been ingrained so long that most people are sticking with antithrombin 3. There used to be antithrombins 1 through 6. I kind of know this because I did my master's thesis on antithrombins in primates. So it was antithrombin 3 then, and in my mind, it's still antithrombin 3. A great article that deals with this is one called Laboratory Test Names Matter. And I think this is also incorporated. If any one of you have heard of this Choosing Wisely that is out there where they're trying to establish, laboratory tests that should and should not be used, well, they're doing the same thing and they're incorporating names, that get confused, like a P small SA versus a PSA, and what have you. And there's some information on that in a variety of places. I wrote something on that and sent it in for ASCP using how all the suggestions that had been put together for coagulation testing, we incorporated that into one other type things. But I looked at the people from the Hamilton Regional Laboratory Medicine Program guidelines that in some instances, as seen by the table below, this showed that we need to get some standardization accomplished. And I call on all clotters to help with that. Example, the coagulation cascade was suggested testing using Euro-Arabic numbers. Hamilton uses this system that they have here. And like for factor two, which is really thrombin, they've established factors along with this. And you can see here, like factor nine SA, factor nine, and they go on down. The inhibitors, they leave alone pretty much. This is one of the new factor nine concentrates that is out that they're giving, and this is what they're suggesting that people use. This is what it's previously named. So factor five, Leiden. Now, this was one that really was a problem for us for quite some time. People ordered a factor five test. Okay, factor five is a one-stage clotting assay that is used for factor five deficiencies. Factor five, again, very rare. It's in the common pathway. And we, again, had to go and say, are you looking for a factor five Leiden? Because that's something completely different than a factor five. And really, it's a question of not so much as communication, but it is a question of have these people been introduced to this, like when they were going through training? It starts there. And very tough stuff. Also, now we have chromogenic assays that are out there. There are two-stage methods that are insensitive to any types of inhibitors, things like lupus anticoagulants, actually even some of the coagulation anticoagulants in the DOAC systems, like direct oral anticoagulants and things of that nature. Like factor VIII inhibitor, there is the Bethesda assay and there is the Nimagen Bethesda assay. And so we're trying to get this all worked out. Givi is another one of the new extended half-lives for treating people with hemophilia. And so which one do they order? Do they say factor VIII Givi or Givi itself? And you see the factor 10, 11, and 12, very weird. Factor 13 activity or functional, that's another issue. So we've got a lot of work to do. And below here,
Dave, it
I've
almost
got.
sounds like there's two issues. It sounds like there's the issue of the nomenclature itself. So, like, is it factor Arabic numeral eight or is it Roman numeral eight? Which one is the standard process? And then it sounds like there's the issue of Factor Five Mud, and it almost sounds like the licensed care providers, like physicians and nurses and whatnot, they just don't understand the difference between what they're supposed to be ordering. So it sounds like there's two problems.
You're right, and it's not their fault entirely. But it puts the lab in a very odd situation. When I came up with the idea for the hybrid curve, some people at Mayo had just kind of suggested that at a meeting, saying we need to be able to do something here to straighten this issue out. And I thought, okay, I shouldn't have to get a resident to go up to the floor and, or the supervisor go up to the floor and try to straighten out this problem. What I wanted to do, was like, okay, let's make it where the lab didn't have to guess. We get an order for a factor X or a factor 10 or a Roman, a European Arabic number 10, and we just turn out the result. They know what they're giving the patient. We shouldn't have to guess because we had to use a single calibrator for every single one of them, and there's five of them out there, counting unfractionated. There's tenzaparin, dalteparin, I can't, Eryxra, and that one may or may not be a heparin, and we still have to use an individual calibrator, or fondaparinux, it's also called. We might have to use we do have to use a single calibrator for that one, but for the other four, we can just run it, turn out the result because they're all standardized pretty much the same way when we use these three calibrators that are in there. They're mixed together, so when you've got the various concentrations set up, with three of them to establish your standard curve, and then you can turn out a you can feel comfortable turning out a result that matches whatever they're sending you. Did you have any other questions on that, Melissa?
No, that was it. I just wanted
Dave?
to kind of go out that it sounded like there's two issues, and I think one of the issues can just be resolved by better education with licensed care providers, but I think that's a different story for a different day.
Right. Well, also, there's another problem with heparin that we're going to talk about a little bit later. Also needs standardization, and that is the concentrations of heparin in the vials. First off, they calculate how much is in a full bottle, but then how do you label this? Different manufacturers have different colors for different heparinoid concentrations. And I'll talk about that a little bit more extensively in the next presentation that we're going to be looking at today. So what we have here is now this is what, and this was furnished to me by Dr. Eric Salazar. I got it from him in a seminar where he was giving an oral presentation on direct oral anticoagulant reversals, which is a whole nother story in itself. But we have a thing called Clot Club, which is a seminar point slide that's where the name came from my blog that I write for Diapharma. But if you'll notice here, everything here is using Arabic numbers. And so how do you feel when you look at that? How did I learn? I learned the coagulation cascade with Roman numerals. Now, a problem with that is they got new gene therapy out for the gene therapy that's coming out, especially for people with hemophilia A and B, factor eight and factor nine deficiencies, is really, really cool because it can last almost a year. The problem is it costs $3.5 million to do that, so they're working on that. But again, they have started mixing up the issue with, okay, are we using Roman numerals or not? Now you've got another slide, Melissa, that can you post that up?
Yep, if you stop sharing, I'll share.
Excuse me, what?
Just have to click stop share and then I can share it.
Okay, where are you? All right.
There you go.
Stop sharing.
Here.
All right. I just found this the other day in the National Library of Medicine, and when I was looking at PubMed. Now, notice up here, factor nine with the European Arabic number, and then coagulation factor nine here. And I'm sitting there going, why did they do that? What is going on here? And they go on to talk about, it's, and look down here where it says, also known as factor nine, P19, P2C, hemophilia B. I don't even know what the next thing is. But it talks, and then it talks about how its actions are, and it's a recessive link disorder, also called hemophilia B, or it used to be called Christmas disease. Have no idea how that came up. Usually, they used to name coagulation factors on where they were discovered, and then they started using some people's names, of course, but like Stuart Prow factor, Hageman factor, that type of thing. But again, I'm sitting there going, this is updated, as you can see, 27 August 2024, and they're throwing the confusion at us again. So to me, there needs to be an international committee that says it's this way. International Society of Thrombosis and Hemostasis together and try and come up with a consistent type of identification so it can make it easier for the people that actually have to do the tests and those that have to order them.
Well, and that would probably help standardize when companies are making drugs that they're going to use whatever the international standard is. And if anything, I know that my students hope for the Arabic numbers and not the Roman numerals.
Yeah. Your students don't want the Roman numerals either.
No, I think they, I mean, I when I draw out the coag cascade for them, I always use Roman numerals. But whenever, I'm pretty sure whenever they write out the coag cascade, that they're using Arabic numbers and not Roman numerals.
Well, it's surprising me that how many people just don't have, first off, they haven't used them, and but they were never taught them. So, it's created kind of a morass of confusion. And like I said, primarily in the order of the testing. And like I said, when they call it factor X. Now, that brings up a funny story. David Letterman hasn't been on in a long time, but when the movie Malcolm X came out, he said, "Hey, has anybody seen that new Malcolm 10 movie?" Trying to be funny on that, but I'm sitting there going, "Yeah, I can see how that could happen." And especially, in coagulation, you've got a real problem with this. So, so basically, what I wanted to say is we need to work on the standardization. If you go to the website Clot Club, you can find a list of references there that I've used to get these type of things. And I kind of want to close on this one and say, okay, there's still a problem in many laboratories. Thankfully, we now have some solutions to this problem. In fact, I thought, why does the coagulation laboratory have to go through the trouble of determining the type of test when we should be able to use it straight up? We've got one type of nomenclature for it. And basically, after that conversation with the nurse on trying to figure the type of heparin it was, I worked up a research protocol, got it funded, ran it through our institutional review board, started it out, and within 2 years, companies were already starting to use the hybrid co correct calibration curve. And so there are some answers to this. And now the anti-10A is standardized and used just about everywhere. I think there are some people that still get confused on it, but again, we now have a better test than the PTT for doing heparin monitoring. And that's what it's all about, isn't it? To give the doctors a better number in order to treat that person on the end of that blood sample. And also, a chromogenic assay has less interfering factors than the cloudable assay that we don't have to worry about. So, thanks for your time and appreciate you listening. If there's any questions, you can go to the website Clot Club and I'll be glad to answer them. Or you can just dial me up at davemcglasson@hotmail.com. Okay?
Yeah, and we will put the link to the Dia Pharma website, Clot Club, so
Okay.
that anyone can click on it, and there's info about Dave there, and there's of course all of his blog posts there. So we will post that in the description if anyone's interested in going to the website and learning more.
Have you got any other questions, Melissa or Dave?
Yeah, it's just I just anecdotes and just generally I've seen the misnomers and things a lot. I would say that the anti-10A seems to have gotten better with the clinical staff on the floor.
Right.
They generally understand that it's a heparin monitoring assay, first and foremost. I think there's still not a clear understanding as to what all the symbols mean, right? I don't think most folks really pay attention to that little A. That A is an important piece of the identification of like what's
Right.
going on here, right? And so like those are those kind of like subtleties. Heck, even the fact anti-10A, right, is far different than 10A is different than 10, right? And so it's a tricky sort of issue because I don't expect that most nurses are going to have the same understanding of coagulation
Oh, for sure.
as a laboratorian. So that's a struggle. And then you have clinical higher up the chain physicians. Well, geez, I don't know how much they really get of the clotting
Yeah,
cascade as well.
we actually had LaShantha Bryce on in her episode. She talks about how physicians have a different understanding of hemostasis than
Yeah.
we do as laboratorians. So even that, the way they learn it versus the way we learn it is very different. They learn physiological and we learn both physiological, but we really focus on PT, APTT, and like the laboratory testing versions of it. So yeah, I mean, there's the level of understanding between the physician, the nurse, the laboratorian that's going to be very different for coag. I think the other thing with anti-10As that adds to the confusion now is the addition of all of the other oral direct oral
Yes.
anticoagulants and how we
Right.
can use the anti-10A assay with the right calibrators for
Yep.
that. But again, the assays are just measuring anti-10A capacity and
Well,
not actual drug activity. So I think there's a whole different layer of confusion with the anti-10A when you add in the DOACs.
the DOACs also are, you've got two types. You've got the anti-2As and then you've got the anti-10As. So that's another issue too. They can be monitored, like you said, with individual. Now those can be monitored with individual calibrators, and it does work very well. In fact, you can even do it. I worked up one where you could even do it with dilute Russell Viper Venom confirmatory reagent with calibrators. So there's a number of ways of doing that. But again, it and those particular anticoagulants interfere with your regular coagulation testing too. So you got to figure out a way, okay, how do I get rid of those drugs? And there are ways of doing it using charcoal extraction reagents. My good buddy Tom Exner in Australia kind of came up with that idea, and those are sold through, well, Dia Pharma has a product where you can get rid of that. So as somebody once said, Dave, coag is hard, man. How you understand it? I said, you look for the missing piece. Yeah, that's what you look for. So do you have anything else?
Yeah, it's an interesting set of problems. And when you when we first were talking, like in discussion about what we might talk about, and nomenclature comes up, it triggered me instantly because I think it's There's different pieces of the laboratory. We focused on this one. You brought up the PSA test, and so there's all sorts of like nomenclature issues that kind of crop up over time. But yeah, I think that staff training, I think that the education system generally, I don't know that we could do much about primary schools teaching, Roman numerals. What I will say is that I would encourage clinical laboratory teachers to use, geez, the system we've had, right? So, I mean, you've brought up the discussion about standardizing, and I thought that's what we've already done, right?
Well,
So.
I thought especially something that I'll be discussing in the next presentation is I thought we had standardized heparin concentrations by color on each individual vial, like 10,000 units is green, 5,000 is white, and so on. I found out that that has not been done between manufacturers. So, you've got a problem there also. But to give an example though, I did that factor and that ca hybrid calibration curve 10 years ago, and we're still battling the issue in some places. So yeah, it's onward through the fog, I guess we can say. Yeah.
We need to try, I think, as the laboratory, to build systems that geez, sort of control for some of this confusion. So I think that the test name needs to be precise, and then the description that comes along with it, right? So I think
Exactly.
where
Good point.
where it's we're able, we have a nice, accurate description as to what that test kind of entails for the clinical
Those should be
team.
built into the list systems when they order them. Yeah.
And so we might be lazy, and depending on the lab and the setup, we might be a little lazy about that, but maybe it's prudent to have a little bit more of like a discussion with the clinical team about here's what the test name will be. Please excuse the dogs outside. Here's what the test name will be. Here is the description. Does that make sense to you, to the clinical team? Because it needs to be
Right.
intuitive for them to use too. But
Exactly. Good points. Good
yeah.
points.
But
Okay.
great discussion though.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah,
I
well.
enjoyed it too. You guys had great comments and questions. Made it much, much easier.
Good, good.
Are we
Yeah, we're
so?
good. So, Dave, thank
Yeah.
you very much for joining us. We appreciate you being here and everybody else. Thanks for listening.
Okay. Goodbye, everybody. Thank you. Like I said, any questions, get in touch with me. I'll be glad to answer them.
Yeah, thanks for your time.
If I don't know it, I know where to find it.
You
All right. Thank you. Have a good day.